Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stenciled on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Silent. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Mooney looking, bouncing into Owens, knocked away. Perkins picks it up. He's a three at the buzzer. It's no good. Texas Tech has done it. The dream has become reality. For the first time in school history, the Texas Tech Red Raiders are going to the Final Four.
Good morning, Acadiana. I'm Raymond Parts III, your host for the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Even though we're only on for 2 hours this morning, you still give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We'd love to talk to you. 337-706-0111. Once again, 337-706-0111. We got a lot to get to today. We got our good friend Tim Grubbs, the voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes. He's going to give us a season preview of the AAA affiliate right down the road in New Orleans of the Miami Marlins. That'll be coming up at 7:02. Then our friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast is going to be talking all things Saints with us at 7:32. But as that music suggests, it's time to talk college basketball. Today will be the first of our four previews on the Final Four teams. And we're going to lead things off with the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Was there a more surprising team in this year's NCAA tournament, the Final Four? You know, look, Texas Tech has built up to this. Remember last year, the Red Raiders, in the second year of head coach Chris Beard's era, they got to the Elite Eight. Remember, they lost to Villanova. They got all the way to the Elite Eight. They've never been to the Final Four before. This year, they break through as the three seed. This is a team that looked really good during the regular season. They had a hiccup, though, remember, in the Big 12 tournament. They lost to, I want to say, an 8-win or 9-win West Virginia team. Like, West Virginia barely got into their own conference tournament, and they end up going on a little bit of run, and one of those teams that they upset along the way were the Red Raiders. But they've put that behind them, haven't they? That disappointment in the tournament, in their conference tournament, and here they are appearing in their first Final Four. Now, Texas Tech will take on Michigan State there, the second game on Saturday in the two games of the Final Four. But of all the four teams, Michigan State, we know what we get. You got Tom Izzo. You have the tradition. You have the national championship back in 1998. You have the multiple Final Fours and Elite Eights. On the other side of the bracket, you got Auburn, Mr. Personality himself, Bruce Pearl, taking on Tony Bennett. Virginia has a good story. They were the first team to lose as a one seed in the first round to a 16 seed last year. They've redeemed themselves. They're in their first Final Four since 1984. So Texas Tech, of the four, they're the ones that probably people know the least about. Well, we're going to try to help you with that right now. Like I mentioned before, this Red Raiders team lost multiple starters and scorers from last year's Elite Eight squad. They had to replace them, and they did so with some transfers that had to sit out last year. You had Matt Mooney, a South Dakota graduate. When's the last time you heard about a team going, you know what's the missing piece for us? A graduate from South Dakota. No one. No one said that. Not in big-time college basketball. They had another graduate transfer, Tariq Owens. He was from St. John's. Brandon Francois, he originally started his career at Florida. And then Deshaun Corpro, he started off at South Plains Junior College. So they had some transfers come in. A couple of those guys were already on the roster, but they had to sit. Just like here at UL, when they had Malik Marchetti, Jakeenan Gant, and Marcus Stroman all come in as Power 5 transfers. They had to sit out that year before being able to play due to NCAA transfer rules. But the big fella, a name that you should pay attention to, and a guy if you don't know about, you should know about, is Jarrett Culver. Kid's the real deal. He's going to be drafted into the first round of the NBA if he declares. He was a 3-star prospect coming out of high school. Look, Chris Beard knows how to win. He was a longtime assistant under Bobby Knight at Texas Tech. Went to other places, and particularly at Little Rock in the Sun Belt. Raging Cajun fans should know him because he's the guy that led Little Rock to nearly 30 wins that season, won the Sun Belt tournament, went to the NCAA tournament, and won a NCAA tournament game. And that's what helped propel him to get the Texas Tech job. And slowly but surely, in just a few years, he's built them to an Elite Eight appearance and now their first Final Four. He's also been mentioned, and you'll hear it during the broadcast and you'll hear it the rest of this week, that he is a strong candidate for numerous big-time Power 5 jobs. UCLA, Arkansas, Texas A&M. Any job that's open right now, his name is circled. His name is at the top of that of their list. Now, this is a guy, like I said, Beard has had multiple stops, junior college, non-D1 programs, and of course, Little Rock. He had to replace 4 seniors from last year's team that reached the Elite Eight. And for a program like Texas Tech that barely has any basketball tradition, even when Bobby Knight was there, they would get to the tournament, but it's not like they would put together long runs. It's not like they were churning out first-round draft picks. Last year, he had to replace 4 seniors and first-round NBA draft pick Zaire Smith. Remember? Zaire Smith was drafted in the first round last year. For a program like Texas Tech to lose a guy like that is phenomenal what they've been able to do. Obviously, the 2 grad transfers have helped and their own recruits as well. Jarrett Culver, though, I'm telling you, that's going to be Michigan State's top priority come Saturday, is stopping that young man. He's now seen, he's risen up throughout this season and throughout the tournament. He was a first-round draft pick. Now, experts are saying if he declares, he's going to be a top 10 guy. This guy's a lottery pick. He's going to be the guy, the highest drafted guy left in the field of the 4 teams. So if you want a marquee name and you want to see a guy that you're going to see playing in the NBA, it's the Texas Tech Michigan State game. Okay, Culver is that cat. And they just do so many good things. Texas Tech is known for their tenacity. They're also known for their defense. Expect Saturday's game with them in Michigan State to be a low-scoring affair. I'm talking like in the 60s. Okay, this is not going to be a 92-88 type of game. This is not they're not Auburn, who wants to run up the score, okay, and wants to just run and down up and down the court. They don't. Texas Tech wants to, like Michigan State, they kind of want to slow you down. They play tenacious defense. They get after it. And they have a guy that can take over the game like Culver. So how do they match up with Michigan State? Obviously, they're going to be the underdog versus Sparty. Michigan State has the pedigree with Tom Izzo. He has a national championship under his belt. He has all those Elite Eights, all those Final Four appearances, like I've already stated. Okay, and Michigan State looks like a team with a purpose, do they not? They appear to be a team dead set on winning a national championship and have vanquished many a team along the way, including in the Big Ten when they won the Big Ten regular season title and then they won the Big Ten tournament title, and now they're in the Final Four and vanquished Duke. Okay, And look, Zion Williamson, he got a double-double the other day in that game in the Elite Eight matchup. Okay, but no one else from Duke really stepped up because Michigan State was like, okay, well, Zion, you're going to get yours. That's fine. We're going to take away everyone else. And in college basketball, one guy cannot win the game for you, with the exception of maybe what Carmelo Anthony did for Syracuse back in the day. That's it. You need someone else to step up. So the other guys for Texas Tech are going to have to step up because Tom Izzo, he will make it frustrating for Culver. You can bank on that. Well, is the Culver kid good enough to still get his points? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely is. There's no doubt about that. But other players on that Texas Tech roster for Chris Beard are going to have to step up and make big plays because Michigan State just has a chip on their shoulder. And here's the other thing. The Red Raiders have never been at this stage before. Now, part of that is that can be a good thing and it can also be a bad thing. The good thing is that, well, they don't know. Like, they don't know any better. They don't understand the moment, and they're just going to go out there and they're going to play basketball. Very true. But Beard hasn't been out on this level before. I'm sure he's learned, and I'm sure he's picked up the phone and called Bobby Knight and asked him for advice this week. I'm sure he'll do that. But this is the first time Texas Tech has ever been in the Final Four. And there's going to be a lot of microphones in these kids' face, and there's going to be a lot of spotlight on their head coach and his agent are going to have to field a lot of job offers. This is going to be the most stressful week of the season for Texas Tech. Of the four teams, they're the one that has not had to deal with the spotlight as much as the other ones. Virginia's had to deal with being in the spotlight for being the team that lost to the 16 seed and always underperforming during March Madness. Bruce Pearl has not met a microphone he does not like. And he's constantly making headlines, whether he's on television sets or he's dealing with the NCAA or whatever it may be, okay? He's never been to a Final Four either, but he's dealt with the spotlight shining the brightest. Texas Tech hasn't. So that could be a good thing for them, or they just don't care. They're like, hey, whatever. We can deal with this. Y'all haven't paid attention to us for the majority of the season. We play in Lubbock. We get that. We're going to use this to our advantage. Or being on the big stage there in Minneapolis when they take on Michigan State Saturday night at 7:49 p.m. could be a little daunting. But that is an intriguing matchup. Both matchups are intriguing for different reasons. The contrast of styles with Auburn and Virginia intrigue me. But the fact that Michigan State and Texas Tech do have similarities, they have playmakers that can take over a game, and they play good defense, that intrigues me as well. And it's not the kind of good defense that Virginia plays that makes you want to turn off the television. Okay? They play the type of defense that's actually good and doesn't make the game just terrible to watch. That's going to do it for our first of our four Final Four previews on the teams there in Minneapolis. Today, Texas Tech. Tomorrow will be Sparty. Michigan State will stay on that side of the bracket with that matchup. And then it'll be Virginia on Thursday. And unfortunately, I'll have to talk about Auburn on Friday. You see what I did there, Cody? I made sure to have to talk about Auburn on the same day that I'll have my rant of the week. Oh, good times, good times. Final Four week is here, though, on the Wrap Game with RP3. Coming up next, we'll preview a little LSU baseball getting back to action tonight, hosting Grambling State right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a holler. You want to talk Final Four, LSU baseball, LSU basketball. If you want to talk about... if you want to call up and talk to Cody Schutz and go, Cody, how are you feeling today? He could, you know, he may appreciate that.
I would, because that would give me just the sliver, a little tiny little opening I need to say happy WrestleMania week on a Tuesday to you.
You're welcome, Cody. You can give us a call on the Harco Equipment Hotline.
You know, there's a theme forming here. Yesterday, I had my five-knuckle shuffle shirt on, which I also got married in, by the way. Today, I'm rocking the American Nightmare Cody shirt, so there you go.
Good job, buddy. Proud of you.
I mean, it's cool when like, one of the son or the grandson of a plumber has your name. Because Dusty and then and Cody.
Let's see what you did.
Dusty Rhodes, and for everyone, was the son of a plumber.
Yes,
which
yes,
would
was.
Then make Dusty's son the grandson
of a plumber.
Yes,
that's correct. That's correct.
Loses a little bit of its sting when you got to explain it.
It usually does. It usually does, man. It usually does.
It's WrestleMania week. That's all I know. Raw last night was incredible. It was great. A 2019 episode of Monday Night Raw went fade to black, going into WrestleMania with Kurt Angle having Baron Corbin in an ankle lock and Baron Corbin tapping out like a little girl. That's how the episode ended. I am happy.
I have questions. We will discuss
that's fine.
Off the air.
That's fine.
I don't know why Kurt Angle needs to be anywhere around WrestleMania or Monday Night Raw in 2019.
It's his farewell match on Sunday. Like he struggles in the ring, brother. You're not wrong to think. Like, it's almost when you know how well and how good Kurt Angle was and you watch him now, it's a little hard to watch, but they've given him a good farewell tour. He's getting all the bells and whistles. He's winning matches against people he has no business winning, and he's going to have one good final farewell match. He cried last night on Raw. They played a video package of his career. Yeah. It was emotional for him. I clapped. I was like, this is cool.
Oh, you gave him the golf clap, did you?
I mean, I was in my house. I'm not going to go crazy.
Listen to you. I was in my house, right? I'm not going to go crazy. How dare you?
What are you talking about?
How dare you suggest that I would do anything?
It's not how we conduct ourselves in a democracy.
If you want to talk, if you want to talk WrestleMania, you can give us a call at 337-706-0111. That is the Arco Equipment Hotline. LSU baseball returns to action tonight. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game is at 6 o'clock. First pitch is at 6:30. So the good brother Ben Love will lead you up to the show. He'll be on from 4 to 6. And then LSU pregame will take over at 6. First pitch, 6:30. LSU welcomes Grambling State to Alex Box Stadium for a pair of the first of two midweek games. They'll play tonight. They'll also play tomorrow night in a makeup game with South Alabama. They got postponed, canceled due to weather from earlier in the season. So it'll be Grambling tonight at 6:30, first pitch. South Alabama tomorrow night, first pitch at 6. And then comes the three-game stand versus Texas A&M Friday, Saturday, Sunday there at the Box. That's going to be a hell of a series. Now, look, LSU is 6-3 in SEC play now after getting the series win at Mississippi State, Stark Vegas. They've now won a SEC regular season series over Mississippi State in 13 of the past 14 seasons. Is it really a rivalry if one side is dominating the other? I don't know. That'll be a question for another day. Here's something that's interesting, though, and I'll pose this to you. We feel like LSU may have turned a corner after losing on the road at Georgia to open up. Oh, I'm sorry. They beat Kentucky at home to open up SEC play, but we know Kentucky's awful. They go on the road. They lose the series to Georgia. Then they lose the midweek game to McNeese State, the Fighting Cowpokes. Then they lose the opener after Zach Hess gets roughed up at Mississippi State on Thursday. And then the bats exploded finally. DePlantis had a two-run home run gave C.J. Willis, the kid from Ruston. He had a hell of a game. That Reed is still on a tear. So the bats are waking up. Walker looked like he was returning to form. Cody, do you feel like LSU turned a corner this past weekend, or do you need to see a little bit more? Because here's the thing. At first glance, you're like, well, yeah, they took 2 or 3 from the number two team in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also just told you that they have absolutely owned Mississippi State Some of those years, LSU's been really good. Some of those years, they haven't, yet they always find a way to still own Mississippi State. Do you still need some more proof that LSU's truly turned the corner, and will that come this weekend when Texas A&M comes to town?
This is like a layered answer for me because, yes, the fan in me is yeah, man, they just took down Mississippi State. They're going in the right direction. With two midweek games this week, a very good opportunity to win two games in the midweek in a row, continue your momentum forward, winning and going into the weekend. So, yes, that part of me is like, go ahead. But I would lie to you if, I guess, the sports radio part of me that tries to look at things as an overall picture, if there wasn't a piece of me going, yeah, but you do realize 48 hours prior to how you feel now, you felt absolutely terrible about this team and how bad this season could end up turning out. So knowing that it changed that quickly for the better, it makes it obvious that it's very possible for it to change back.
You're a little cautious.
A lot cautious.
Yes, because I'm pretty sure we can pull the tape from Friday's show about you being very fired up.
Yeah, pretty angry.
You were angry. I would have caution as well. And I don't care what happens in these midweek games, Cody. I think, yeah, you would like them to be able to win these games.
Losing the midweek games doesn't hurt them. It just pisses me off.
Right. My bigger concern is that they take 2 of 3. They go up in the polls a little bit. But let's look at the college baseball polls. And I know in some of them, there's a slew of SEC teams ranked, as you would expect.
Well, LSU moved up in all but one. 4 of the 5, they moved up. In perfect game, they sat at 16. I don't think they moved at all, if I remember correctly.
Ranked above them, and let's just use the USA Today coaches poll. Okay, these are ones that are voted by the coaches. Vanderbilt's 4, Georgia 7, Mississippi State 8, Arkansas 9, A&M 11, LSU 12. The coaches believe 5 other teams are better than LSU in the SEC.
LSU's taken a series from 2 of those 5 teams. and 1 on the road. Just throwing that out there, whatever
right,
that's worth.
Right, right. So, yes, I'm like, okay. I still think probably people still have an abundance of caution when it comes to the
Tigers.
Did
you really say abundance of caution? Get out of here.
Yes, I did, sir. So, we'll see. Getting a win tonight against Grambling. Once again, you can listen to the game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game, 6 o'clock. First pitch, 6:30. They could roll. They get Grambling, South Alabama. You'd love to see them take 2 or 3 from Texas A&M or possibly sweep them at the box this coming weekend. And then you could probably, with more confidence, Cody, say that they've turned a corner. So we'll see. LSU does get back to work tonight. When we come back, Astros, Rangers, they played last night. How did it fare? We'll let you know right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Another 3-2. And Springer drills this one deep to left center field. It sends back Gallo looking up. See you later! Leadoff home run for George Springer. And the Astros are up 1-0. Springer with his 2nd of the year. 3-2. That's lifted out in the shallow right center field. Correa is out. He's camped, makes the catch, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros end a 3-game skid as they defeat the Texas Rangers by a final of 2-1. Astros have won 9 in a row over the Rangers here at Globe Life Park in Arlington.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, as always, 337-706-0111. We started off the show giving you a deeper look into one of the 4 Final Four teams in Texas Tech. Then we talked a little LSU baseball, getting back on the diamond tonight against Grambling State. We're going to keep it on the diamond, but we're going to talk about them. Houston Astros finally got off the snide after starting off the 2019 season with a convincing-sounding victory over the artist formerly known as the Devil Rays. They ended up losing three straight, dropped a series at Tampa, back on the road in their in-state rivalry with the Texas Rangers. And they pulled out a victory. A close one, though. Okay? It was not an easy game by any stretch of the imagination. But they got the victory. You heard the Springer dinger that helped them get that. But they got the win and hopefully can now start building up some momentum. Springer comes up huge in the game. And Houston has kind of dominated this series in recent years. Remember, it was the other way around when Texas was going with under Ron Washington. They had all that great success going to those World Series, and they kind of owned Houston during that stretch. But last night, they were able to take care of business. They took the opener there at Globe Life Park. Rangers starter Drew Smyly wasn't bad. He was making his first start since 2016. But George Springer welcomed him back by making him throw six pitches before drilling that one into the bleachers. So, hey, man, welcome back. You haven't pitched in the big leagues in a long time. Congrats. I'm going to make you work me on this count. I'm going to work this count, and then I'm going to drill one over the wall. But I'll give it up to the Rangers, and in particular to Smyly, that he calmed down after that, right? He pitched well. The Stros struggled at the plate last night. But the guy shook off the rust. He shook off the leadoff home run, and he pitched well. The Astros stranded runners all over the place last night while facing both Smyly and then Adrian Sampson, who threw in the final six innings. That slim lead seemed to be okay for the Astros. That was until Ronald Guzman's home run that tied up things in the third inning. So this was a 1-1 game. Okay? Springer leads off, gets the home run. You're thinking, here we go. Floodgates are going to open. Astros are just going to pound the hell out of this kid and just get after him, and they're going to rout the Rangers. No, no. Credit to the Rangers pitching staff. They calmed down afterwards. Terrific performance by Adrian Sampson, who pitched six strong innings. And then the Rangers got on the board with a Guzman home run to tie things up in the third. But Carlos Correa came up big to start off the sixth inning. He got the double into the right center gap. And then he was able to score on a double.
Chirinos?
I
know what you're doing. I get it. I'm looking at it too. Chirinos.
We'll just call him Rob because his first name's Robinson.
Robbie C.
Yeah, what? RC.
RC.
There it is.
Coming through with the RBI double. You know what? I wonder, maybe Steve Sparks will shed a little light on the situation.
Five appearances, four of them starts for the Rangers last September. 1-0, and that's hit on a line and over the leap of Cabrera and down the left field line. Racing around third is Correa. He will score without a throw. Trying to get to second now is Chirinos, and he just does beat the throw from the left fielder Gallo. The Astros lead it 2-1.
Chirinos. We had to wait like 20 seconds.
Steve Sparks with the cliffhanger.
I was like, he's never going to mention this guy's name. How awesome is that? Oh, but Chirinos, he gets the double, drives in Correa. That proves to be enough as the Astros are able to hang on for the 2-1 victory. Breggs, he went 1-for-2, and he drew two walks. Look, very rarely this year. I'm just going to say it now. Breg's got the big contract. He was an MVP candidate last year. Breg's is going to draw a lot of walks this year. I'm just saying now. They're going to look at that lineup, and he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy that's going to get. He's going to get the walks. He's going to draw. Yeah, he's going to draw the walks because, as formidable as the Astros lineup is, he's going to be the guy that you're not going to want to pitch to. And look, Springer, we know what he can do with the Springer dingers, and Altuve is a former MVP, and Carrera can lace doubles into the gaps all day long. So they don't have a weak spot in their lineup. But the guy that has the bit of the power, too, and can hit for average and the MVP candidate, you're going to see a lot of Bregman. Plus, he's disciplined. So he's not going to swing at garbage pitches, okay? He's not one of those, like, mid-90s steroid guys who swung at terrible pitches all the time because they were just focused on getting 40 home runs. Okay, that's not Breggs. He's very disciplined at the plate. So he's gonna make pitchers pitch to him, and a lot of pitchers are going to be scared too. So don't be surprised if you see the former LSU star rack up a ton of walks this year. Carrera had a good game, though, 3-for-4. And that's the other thing too, Cody. Let's say you try to pitch around Breggs, right? Well, you're going to have to pitch to someone. So Carrera is going to have a big game, or Altuve is going to have a big game, or Springer is going to have a big game. You have to pick your poison here. So right. They decided, okay, well, they walked Breggs twice. Breggs drew 2 walks. Okay, great. Well, you have a runner on base now, and you have to pitch to these other cats who, when they're healthy, that lineup is formidable.
The biggest thing is, I think, the reason, like, not taking away anything from the talent that Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, and the like have. Those guys are ultra-talented. The thing is, when you're part of a team like that, Raymond, you don't want to be that weak link. When you look at, you know, the 9 guys in the lineup with you, and you're like, man, this guy rakes. He rakes. He can smoke. He power hitter. This guy, he's always on base. This and that. You don't want to look at yourself and be like, okay, I'm the guy that, like, the other teams are like, okay, let's get this easy out here type of thing. Watching your teammates perform at that high of a level makes you want to perform at that high of a level. And the Astros have seemed to found a way to take that hitting is contagious or good ball is contagious and try and basically apply it to their entire season in every game, which, I mean, that's what the best teams want to do. The best teams have players that you're not sure who the best player on their team is. Can you tell me who the best player is on the Astros?
You would lean, for the last couple of years, you would lean towards Altuve.
Justin Verlander. I'll see your Altuve with Justin Verlander. Pitcher, see what I'm saying?
But a pitcher doesn't play every day.
But how important was Justin Verlander to the Astros winning that World Series? I understand. We can argue. The point is, I'm not trying to argue.
No,
there is an argument to be made who the best player is on the Astros. There's an argument to be made who the best player is on the Cubs. There's an argument to be made who the best player is on the Red Sox. You see what I'm saying? These teams that are studs that have established themselves to be the Indians. I mean, Lindor is probably their best player, but I mean, still, they have guys that can pitch.
They usually have like a half dozen key guys.
Yeah.
You need that many guys to make a run these days.
Yeah.
You just do. You're exactly right. You
got to find a team that you don't have that one mega suit. Like when the Cubs, older Cubs, had just Sammy Sosa. Good job. That's great. Or they had just Alfonso Soriano. We know how that worked out. They had Derek Lee, who wasn't even considered a top-tier player, and that was the one guy they had. Aramis Ramirez came on late. Or even
the Dodgers, when you're thinking when they had Kemp back before the World Series run, they had Matt Kemp, but they also had Kershaw, but still that wasn't enough.
Right.
Right. So, yeah.
Needed the, was it Cody Bellinger or whatever his lad? They needed to add those other. But so that's my point is when you look at the best teams in baseball, it's much more difficult to pick out, oh, yeah, this is their best player. And I think that's kind of the key.
I would agree with that. Yeah. It's not like the Nationals when they had Bryce Harper.
Right.
Right. Or even now when they.
Are the Angels with Mike Trout.
Right.
Now, the question is, and this is where the reason I can't, because, I mean, I'm sitting here like, oh, you just got to do this and you win. It's that simple. Like, no, I don't know how to get to that point.
That's how I set my fantasy baseball right lineup. Why is this an issue?
So where the difference in team to team comes in is who's running your team. Is Jeffrey Luhnow doing a better job than other guys? Is Theo Epstein doing a better job than other guys? And Brian Cashman and the such. Like, yes, the answer is they are doing better jobs than Billy Beane, so to speak, nowadays.
Yes.
I love baseball.
I love baseball, too. And I would agree with that, that you need the multiple players. And I think the Astros have that. They have an abundance of talent. I mean, you have a guy that could win the AL MVP this year and Alex Bregman, and that means you would have two guys that are two MVP guys in recent years. So, not the strongest performance at the plate for the Astros. Peacock pitched well last night for the Stros. They get a big boost. They get a big shot in the arm, so to speak, tonight when Verlander is going to take the bump there at the ballpark in Arlington / Globe Life Park / whatever / soon to be demolished ballpark. So, yeah. So, Astros, they end the losing streak. They get the much-needed W. And now they're going to have Verlander take the mound. So, that's even better that you were able to get a win like that. That you were able to get a W like that without having your ace on the mound. So, now you end the losing streak. You can build some momentum. You'll have Verlander take the mound tonight when the Astros play in game two of their series at the Texas Rangers at 7 o'clock. And you can listen to that game live on the Rewind.
If the LSU baseball game is here tonight.
Yes, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM.
Correct.
Lafayette.
Yes.
Thank you.
I was distracted looking at my Cubs committing 6 errors against your Braves last night.
Dude, we don't have time to get into it right now, but your Cubs defensively, they have not looked good so far this season. Still early.
I'm not worried,
but like they just forgot. It was like Bad News Bears last night. They forgot how to play baseball.
I got to figure out who they had out in left field, because that guy, yeah, Mark Zagunas. Yeah,
you're on the list.
You are bad.
You are on the list.
You are bad, my brother. You're not good at baseball.
Yeah, you're not good at baseball.
In the 1 60-second clip on Twitter I watched, I think he committed 3 of the 6 errors. Like, get off my field.
You are not good at life.
You need to find someone else, anyone else.
Anyone. I recommend Cody Schuetz.
I mean, when you've got Jason Hayward roaming over here in right field, and then you've got this guy, I mean, why not just put Kyle Schwarber out there? You can't do any worse.
You can't do any worse.
He's real slow. This is bad.
It's
all right.
What's Mark Pryor doing these days? I'm sure he's available. You can throw him out there as an outfielder.
I'd rather put Mariano Rivera out there.
Astros back tonight. Once again, you can listen to it live on our sister station, The Rewind, 97.7 FM. First pitch going to be 7:05 tonight. Astros at Rangers. When we come back, we'll keep the baseball talk going. UL, they're at home at the Teague tonight versus Southeastern Louisiana. We'll give you a preview right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're wrapping up the first hour of today's show. Live here from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Coming up, start off the second hour, we're going to talk to the one and only Tim Grubbs. He is the voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes, the AAA affiliate for the Miami Marlins. The final season of Baby Cakes baseball in New Orleans as we know it. So we'll get a bit of a season preview from Tim coming up to start the second hour. But let's talk a little Rage On K Jones. It was another disappointing weekend for the Cajuns as they dropped 2 of 3 to the men of Troy. That's back-to-back weekend series that they've lost. And they're going to have to turn a corner here quickly. They're 13-16 overall. 4-5 in conference. So not terrible in conference play. They're just mediocre. And, you know, look, this team beat Little Rock just a few weekends ago, but they've struggled for the weekend series. They just have. You know, when you go back and you look, they opened up the season losing 2 of 3 to Texas. Then they get swept in a 3-game series at Sam Houston State of the Southland Conference. They bounce back. They take 2 of 3 from Maryland, but then they lost 2 of 3 to Loyola Marymount. Ooh. They beat Little Rock. They win that series, but now they've lost to App State 2 of 3, and now I've lost Troy 2 of 3. They're going to try to get back on track tonight when they welcome Southeastern Louisiana, the Mighty Lions. Lion up, says Cody Schutz, a former student.
A former enrolled person.
I really wouldn't call what I was doing studying. Right. I really wouldn't.
But my youngest sister, she is a Mighty Lion, and she does the lion up thing. She always tries to make us go to the Southeastern UL games, the Southeastern LSU games. I went to the football game, Southeastern LSU, this past year. Yeah. So
will you be meeting your sister over at the Teague tonight?
I doubt it because now she's out of college and has like a job like I do, like a full. So she doesn't. It's not as easy for her. But when she was just a student, we would hit them all.
Nice. So UL will be back at the Teague tonight. It will be 9 of its next 10 contests will be there at the Teague at Russo Park. They play Southeastern tonight. Then they have to go and play at Southeastern for a makeup game tomorrow night there in Hammond. That game will be beginning at 6 o'clock on Wednesday. So, look, they're coming off a 2-2 week, but they did claim a victory in the final game of that series at Troy, where both Todd Lott and Hansa Monica hit home runs. Hayden Cantrell added an RBI double. He is, we've talked about him on the show, he's having a phenomenal season. He's batting 327. On the year, is a team-high 31 runs scored and 14 extra base hits, 6 of which are home runs. Lott has been hot of late as well. He's batting 325. Louisiana's pitcher for both contests is currently listed as to be announced. The game is tonight. To be announced on who's going to pitch tonight and for Wednesday. Southeastern has had its struggles as well. They are 14-13 overall, 6-3 in Southland Conference play. It won its most recent series at Stephen F. Austin, but then dropped the finale to the Jacks. The Lumberjacks, that's right. They are going to be led by a young man named Kyle Schimpf. He leads the Lions offense all season. He's batting 317 with 4 home runs and 26 ribbies. And then Cody Gross is second on the team, batting 301. So they have some guys. Their pitchers are also listed as to be announced. This will be the 118th all-time meeting between the two programs, with Louisiana holding a slight lead, 66-51. Under Tony Robichaux, longtime head coach of the Raging Cajuns baseball team, they are 22-16 against the Lions, including being very dominant, 13-5 in Lafayette. So, is Southeastern going to be, are we going to look back and go, these two games against Southeastern, these two midweek games, is going to help turn things around for the Cajuns? They're going to build up their confidence, beating an in-state team back-to-back nights, and kind of build that momentum heading into this weekend series versus Arkansas State. We'll find out. First hour's in the books here for the Rap Game with RP3. Coming up, interview with Tim Grubbs, voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes, here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. In the first hour, we gave you a look of the first of 4 days of our looks at the Final Four teams. This morning, it was Texas Tech. We also talked a little LSU baseball, gearing up for a midweek game versus Grambling State. We recapped the Astros win over the Texas Rangers and previewed the UL versus Southeastern Louisiana baseball game tonight as well. But right now, we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of today's show. He is the voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes. They open up the season on Thursday. It's our privilege to welcome back onto the show the one and only Mr. Tim Grubbs. Tim, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing great. We're closing in on opening day, so there's a lot of excitement around here.
I can imagine, Tim. I can imagine it's and it probably feels good to be able to be back out there at the ballpark calling games once again. How excited are you just personally to be back out there and start broadcasting some baseball?
You know what? I'm really excited. I mean, this is I got to look at it two ways. The Marlins, you know, if you're a Major League Baseball fan, you take a look at their organization and see that they traded away all their all-stars. But what that has brought is a bunch of riches to the minor leagues. A lot of the guys still are in double-A or single-A, but we're going to have some of those guys that we've gotten in some of the recent trades that sent Christian Yelich to Milwaukee and Giancarlo Stanton to New York and, of course, Marcelo Ozuna to St. Louis. So some of those guys will be here in New Orleans, which means that we should have a very good team. And it's just a matter of, can we keep everybody here, keep everybody healthy, and hopefully bring a championship back here to New Orleans.
Tim, let's talk a little bit about that. The preliminary Baby Cakes opening day roster includes three of the top six prospects in the Marlins organization, and that's according to Major League Baseball Pipeline. Give us a few of the names for the folks to be able to check out, some of the future stars of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, no, Zach Allen, the guy that we saw last year, is going to be one of our anchors of the starting rotation. Nick Neidert, who was the Miami Marlins Pitcher of the Year last year, is up from Jacksonville. He's going to be part of that starting rotation. So the fact that you got two great starters right there anchoring the staff, that's going to help. Plus, we got Eason Diaz, a guy that we got in the trade for Christian Yelich from Milwaukee. He's going to play second base. And Monty Harrison, another guy that came in that same trade, he's going to be in our outfield along with, you know, those are the main prospects. But then you filter in guys like Austin Dean, a guy that a lot of people had penciled in to the Major League roster to start this season, but will start with us, and Isaac Galloway. And we've got some guys. I mean, we've certainly got a lot of talent out there. And you know, as I said, you know, you often wonder when you start the season how much depth an organization has, because at the minor league level, once these guys get going and if they play very well, a lot of times they end up in the major leagues, and you just got to hope that you've got guys at our level, at the double-A level or the backups at our level, that can plug and play and be able to pick up where they left off. And that's what's so important about the minor leagues. They're not here to try to win you a championship, but we certainly hope that they can keep him here long enough to put us in position.
We're talking with Tim Grubbs. He is the voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes. Tim, let's talk a little bit. You mentioned, obviously, Zach. He was part of the roster last year. But also this year is another powerful righty, Nick Neidert. He's Miami's number four prospect, correct? Both of those guys are on the roster. Both of those guys are going to be part of the rotation to start off the season?
Yes, they are. They're both here and ready to go. They have not told me the list of rotation yet, but I'm assuming those guys are day one and day two. So we probably see them pretty quickly here this weekend.
And then another guy that's people can maybe expect to see there in New Orleans is another top prospect. That's Sixto Sanchez. He's going to start off. The 20-year-old is going to start off in Double-A Jacksonville, playing for the Jumbo Shrimp, which I love. But they expect him to somehow. He's going to make the move up this season as well, come over to New Orleans and get some significant playing time with the Baby Cakes. Correct?
I would assume so. He came over in the trade a couple months ago for JT Realmuto, sending him to Philly right before the start of spring training. He's going to start the year in Jacksonville, just Double-A. And I know I've read the articles, probably some of the same ones you've read. And nobody is there's no guarantees in this game that you're going to get called up to Triple-A at some point. But the way the Marlins have been doing it, especially last year was the first year of the Derek Jeter model. Isan Diaz was a guy that opened season last year in Double-A Jacksonville, and they said all along that he would finish here in Triple-A, and sure enough, come late July, he came here, and they wanted to give him a taste, and now the plan for him is to start the year here, and hopefully by June or July to get him to the major league. So they are pacing these guys, and the one thing is with Miami, when you've got a team that you know this is not their year, they're still building, they're still trying to get talent. They're still looking forward to this year's draft and get last year's draft guys up. There's no reason to rush these guys. Their job is to potentially win in 2020 or 2021, which is great for us because that means they will all get substantial playing time here in the minor leagues and hopefully here at AAA.
Tim, what's the feeling like heading into this opener on Thursday night, 7 o'clock? The Baby Cakes host the Round Rock Express there on the Shrine. At the Shrine on Airline. What's the buzz being around? I know, you know, the news came out last year that this will be the final season for the Baby Cakes in New Orleans, that they're going to be relocating. There's been some talk about what's going to happen. You know, is there going to be maybe a Double-A club that's going to come there? We'll dive into that a little bit. But what's the feeling like there around New Orleans about the Baby Cakes season? Are people excited or are people just kind of like, well, you know, you guys are leaving? What's the attitude been like that with your interaction?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's some people that I've talked to that thought the team already moved, but you know, they see you and they see you with your shirt on and they're like, hey, I thought you guys were gone. And I was like, no, we're still here for at least another year and then we'll go from there. And then there's some people that they're, you know, say, well, I'm definitely going to bring my family out and I want to check this out, you know, and I want to support the team and so forth and make sure that everybody knows that this is a city that loves baseball so that they are going to be ready to replace it with another team. So it is kind of, it's mixed. I've heard it both ways over the last couple of months. So I think there is, it's an odd feeling. Just a few of the players that I've talked to already, they don't, you know, when you hate to, this may come across, they don't really care. They're all about like, hey, I'm ready to play. You know, no matter what city the Marlins send me to or whatever city my career sends me to, I'm ready. And if, you know, I'm ready to play here and I'm just going to try to do the best for my career and try to make the next step to getting myself, you know, in a good position to make myself a major leaguer.
Tim, do you think if attendance is good this season and everything like that, that could set things up for them to have another minor league baseball team come there, maybe a Double-A or even a Single-A team?
I would certainly hope so. Obviously, when you look at geography, Double-A would be the one just because of, you know, teams like Biloxi and Pensacola and Birmingham and Montgomery, just the way the geography footprint works with minor league baseball, that it just makes sense that this city would have minor league baseball. It's too big of a city not to have baseball, and it makes sense for it to be in the Southern League. And I think it makes sense. And you know, honestly, when the news broke 6 months ago that this team, the Triple-A team, was moving, I thought it was going to be seamless and that the Double-A team would come in right after. It doesn't appear that way anymore. But that's above, you know, what I do with the club and all that sort of stuff. And I'm hoping that, you know, they make some improvements to the ballpark and the politicians and everything get aligned in the future. And, you know, and that all works out. And that's what we all can hope for so that there's baseball here in 2021 or in the future. And possibly, you never know, you know, hey, maybe there's a Hail Mary, and maybe a year from now they're talking about the Double-A team.
We're talking to Tim Grubbs. He's the voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes. Tim, what's the, you know, obviously you're excited about the season going to start on Thursday. There's a lot of young prospects that are they're going to be coming up. What do you expect to see, though, from this team? I know it's always so fluid because guys are coming and going, and you mentioned it, because they're moving up or moving down. So the makeup of the team is constantly changing as the season progresses. But for you, do you expect this team to make bigger strides compared to what it did last year?
Yeah, I do. I think this team will. I think last year, you know, if you take a look back 2 years ago, you know, we did the interview on opening day or a couple days before opening day. We weren't talking about three of the top six prospects in the Marlins organization. We were talking about one in the top 10, and the rest of the guys were fill-in guys. You know, they were the type of guys already been there, already been to AAA a few times and been to the big leagues for a cup of coffee and sent back. And it was just a makeshift kind of roster of you know, guys that were fill-in. And that's the reason why the team finished, you know, 10 games under 500, where last year's team finished a game under 500. They made some major strides, and this year's team is going to have even more prospects. And it's a younger group of guys and a hungry group of guys that want to make an impact. So I think we're heading in the right direction. You know, the Miami Marlins are, you know, Operation Rebuild, and, you know, they're stripping it down, and we've seen it work. At the major league level, most recently with the Cubs and the Houston Astros, I mean, those were teams that stripped it down, lost 100-plus games, and a few years later, you know, built it right and go on to win World Series. So, I mean, that's what the Marlins are trying to do, and I think that's what you got to do in baseball. It's, you know, unless you're the rich, unless you're the Yankees or the Red Sox who are in constant rebuild mode, you have to get – it starts with the farm system, and it starts with prospects, it starts with drafts. And you got to get the right guys in these major trades. And, you know, we'll see. Time will tell if the Marlins collected the correct amount of talent, you know, from losing some of those prospects, some of those major players with Yelich and Stanton and Real Muto and so far down the line. But we're going to see a lot of that talent here. We saw a little bit of it last year, and this year we've got even more of it. So, I mean, it's exciting. I mean, it really is when you look at that roster and see all that young talent.
Tim, we'll wrap it up with this. For you, man, you've been doing this for a while. What are some of the things that you have to do to get yourself ready? Because it is a grind. The minor league season is quite long. There's a ton of travel involved, you know, crisscrossing the country, or at least the region, for games, you know, staying in hotels, back and forth. What do you do to get prepared for the season? Is there a time where you kind of let yourself relax, vacation, recharge your batteries? And then are there any kind of quirky things that you do to get yourself prepared for the long season?
That's a cool question. Obviously there's some downtime. You know, I do some college baseball, college basketball, and different things for TV in the off season. But, you know, the workload isn't as busy, but you certainly relax with your family. You know, we went to dinner, you know, two nights ago to try to, you know, be like, all right, this is like the last supper for a while. Even though, you know, I'm working all the time, it's just, you're not as, especially the way the baseball schedule is, you have games every night. You don't have the opportunity to be home for dinner very often. But, you know, it's a lot of research. It's a lot of reading up on the guys you and I are talking about. And today is a fun day because today is the first official workout for the team at the ballpark. So they'll be out there. You know, they're going to get there in about an hour. And, you know, you get the chance to talk to the guys. You know, there's so much you can read, you know, online about each one of these guys. Each one of these guys was a tremendous athlete in high school and college and the first few years of minor league baseball. But it's a chance to talk to them and, you know, kind of just have a conversation and just to get a feel for each one of them. And it's an exciting time, you know, with all these guys. And I'm excited about it. You mentioned the travel is quite a grind, but it's fun. And certainly looking forward to opening up here at home.
And Tim, I appreciate you waking up early and making some time for us today. Good luck on the call, and have fun this season. And we'll touch base with you again, my friend.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Hope to see you at the ballpark soon.
Will do. That's Tim Grubbs, voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes, AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins. They start off their season Thursday night down there in New Orleans at the Shrine on Airline. I went last year, Cody. I had myself a good time.
I did too. I went to one game last year.
So did I.
It was a Friday night fireworks game. It was
I had fun.
make you laugh. It was actually a year ago this Friday coming up that I went, because I went the Friday before WrestleMania. We were already in the city. It was Friday. We didn't have an event to do until Saturday. WrestleMania itself wasn't until Sunday. We were already in the city. It was Friday night. Oh, look, there's a Baby Cakes game, and they're doing fireworks. So that's where we ended up.
Nice. Nice.
It was fun. It was a good call. We enjoyed it.
I do. I do enjoy it. Me and a couple of buddies went down last.
Now, Thursdays are really the days you need to go, but couldn't make it on a Thursday. Dollar beer night, man.
Nice.
Dollar beer night.
So I see in our future both you and I calling in on a Friday and not being able to go because we went down for dollar beer night.
Maybe we can trick someone into giving us off Good Friday, and we can just go on that Thursday. It'll be fine.
More rap game with RP3 coming up. Apparently, Odell Beckham Jr. has a mutant ability. We'll talk more about that right here on 103.7 The Game. Hey, friends. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe for safety. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or even a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it is so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can simply avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. Everyone, demolishers and everyone, are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the person to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. So call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
I mean, I feel like we spoke this into existence almost. Like him and I dreamed of this. You know, this is something we talked about at 17. You know, I'm going to live right down the street from you. We're going to be on the same team, everything. Like, and it's like surreal.
That was Odell Beckham Jr. Apparently, he has the mutant ability, him and Jarvis Landry do, where they can just will things into existence. Their childhood dream of playing in the NFL together.
I forget. There is an X-Men that can do that. I forget what. But you know what? They Green Lanterned it.
They Green Lantern.
Because Green Lantern, that was anything they can imagine, they can form with their ring. So that's what we're going to go with.
That's right. Former LSU wideouts Odell Beckham Jr. Jarvis Landry had spoke this into existence. The childhood friends who ended up going to LSU together. Now, mind you, they went to separate high schools together. Even though they grew up together, they went to separate high schools. Beckham went to Isadore Newman, the same place where Peyton Manning and Eli Manning would go to. Jarvis ended up going to Lutcher, I do believe. They both were at LSU at the same time. They both played together on those great teams that did not have good defenses at LSU and a very good offensive line. They both made it to the NFL. They both made it to the Pro Bowl. And there's been a lot of buzz about that. Nike put out a commercial that's just making people lose their mind on social media. We will retweet that on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. It's basically their story of together, Jarvis and Odell Beckham, them growing up together. There's a bunch of photos. There's a bunch of highlights of them making one-handed catches at LSU, playing in the pros, the whole nine yards.
And they do like a Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham, this is your life.
Yeah, essentially. Essentially. The only thing that's missing is Tom Rinaldi doing the voiceover. But they had the press conference yesterday there in Cleveland. And they were there together. And, of course, they had Baker Mayfield and defensive end Myles Garrett was also on the podium for the introductory press conference. Beckham said this, there's no better place to be than here. Beckham played his first five seasons with the Giants. Once again, a player, an NFL player in his prime, at the top of his game, considered to be one of the top three at his position, in the heart of his prime years, says there's no better place to be than Cleveland. Let that wash over you for a second. That the Browns have somehow, the factory of sadness, have somehow become a destination where guys want to go. How in the hell did that happen? Am I in a time machine? Did Bill and Ted pick me up and we went back to the 80s where Ernest Biner and Bernie Kosar are wearing the Browns uniforms?
Be excellent to each other.
By the way, Bill and Ted 3 coming. It was announced last week.
No way. Keanu Reeves, for real?
Yeah, dude. They announced it.
Bill S. Preston Esquire.
Yes.
Ted Theodore Logan.
Yes. So, Beckham, Landry, you know, they've teased the idea about being teammates multiple times. And then, you know, we heard the clip about Beckham saying that they feel like that they willed this into existence. But here's the thing. And you watch the press conference, and they got the great Nike ad about Beckham and Landry being reunited and playing together in Cleveland. And they've been making all types of moves, and they have a great young core with Landry and now Beckham. You have Baker Mayfield entering his second season. You got Myles Garrett, a pass rusher, looks like a franchise piece there on the defensive side of the ball. They have some nice pieces. They got a guy with a ridiculously awesome name in Freddie Kitchens as now their head coach. All this buzz about the Browns, all this buzz about Cleveland being a destination. We're talking about the Browns, and it's April. And we're talking about the Browns for all the right reasons. But y'all do know Cleveland was 7-8-1 last year, right? I'm just still need to point that out.
Yeah, but weren't they like 2-14 the year before that? Or 0-16 maybe? I mean, they were bad.
That's correct.
7-8-1 is not good. I'm not
but
trying to say
it's,
that.
It's
but.
Baby steps. It's not giant steps.
Oh, are they going to win the Super Bowl this year? No, if they make the playoffs this year, they should throw a parade.
If they win 9 games. Okay. If they win 9-10 games, it's a good year for Cleveland. Okay,
they win 10 games, yeah, hell yeah.
Oh, 10 games, yeah, they'll probably throw a parade. Hell, if they win 10 games, they'll rename the stadium after Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. for willing it into existence.
Former LSU receiver stadium.
And then you know what's going to happen after that, Cody, is that if they go to the playoffs and they win a playoff game, that the focus of the Cleveland Browns organization will be signing as many LSU guys as possible. They're like, we're just going to stockpile all these guys. They have like voodoo or something. They do great for our franchise. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, we'll talk to our friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We are efforting our good friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We'll try to get him on here. If not, we'll reschedule. But it seems like things have calmed down with a free agency involving the New Orleans Saints. That said, there's something interesting that I saw that could be a great thing for the Saints for the draft. WhoDatDish.com is reporting that the Saints are scheduling a workout with Jalen Ferguson. That's right. The Louisiana Tech star pass rusher and the NCAA's all-time sack leader. It was announced on Friday that the Saints were scheduling a workout with Ferguson. And I think that's a terrific move because there's a lot of talk about them. Oh, they need to get a tight end, possibly there in the second round with their second round pick. There may not be one there. You know, Foster Moreau could be gone by then. So they're doing their due diligence. And in the NFL, you can't have enough pass rushers. And this kid is special. Absolutely special. You know, they lost. The Saints did lose Alex Okafor to the Kansas City Chiefs. They still have Cam Jordan. They have last year's first-round pick, Marcus Davenport. They have Trey Hendrickson. And then they acquired Mario Edwards on a cheap deal as well to give depth. But are you really going to turn down getting another pass rusher? A guy that's been as dominant as Ferguson has been? I don't think so. Now, if you remember, the Saints don't pick until number 62. That's their only selection in the first, I want to say, at least three rounds, maybe even four. Now, Ferguson's did look like being a borderline first-round draft pick. Then there was the incident that involved him being disinvited from the combine. Quick recap. An incident from 2015 when he was a freshman there at Louisiana Tech. He got into a fight with another individual at a McDonald's. And Ferguson was charged with simple battery, a misdemeanor, and was forced to pay a fine of only $189. It was not made to be a big deal, but when the NFL found out about it, they disinvited him. They rescinded the invitation to the NFL Combine. That caused some people to panic. That caused some people to say, oh, my God. Public backlash, though, and Ferguson's attorney doing a little bit of a media blitz, the NFL actually scaled back, allowed him to come to the combine for testing and interviews, but not for the physical testing and positioning drills. By all reports, though, this is a good kid. He got in one incident when he was a freshman, like 5 years ago, when he was a redshirt freshman. All is good now. Ferguson may not be there, though, at number 62. So, you're probably going to have to trade up to the early part of the second round in the 40s. So, I'll ask you, Cody Schutz, diehard New Orleans Saints fan, man rocking the Saints beanie as we speak, how would you feel if the Saints made some moves and drafted the young man, the NCAA's past all-time sack leader out of Louisiana Tech?
Let me start by putting out there that what I'm about to say is under the premise that the Saints, whatever moves they make to get this kid, they don't give away the farm. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Like maybe a few picks here and there. So barring...
You can move up in the second round by giving away a future third.
That's what I'm saying. Barring throwing away a first-round pick somewhere or a key player. So none of that. All that aside.
Or mm-hmm. They could do this. They could trade away their first round pick for 2020 because we've talked about that before, about them going all in, getting up into the first round, but also maybe getting another second for it. You understand what I'm saying?
If you trade your first round and you get a second, you get a first and second round this year for it, then yeah, I mean, I'm all for that.
They could use one of those picks, but I'm sorry, continue, yeah.
But no, I look at it this way. Small school or not, what level of football this guy played at or not, if you are the all-time sacks leader in college football, one thing you can say for sure is that he knows how to get to the quarterback. Now, was he up against SEC offensive linemen? No. But that doesn't change the fact that he does not know how to get to the quarterback. Warren Sapp, small college, right? Or did he come out of high school even maybe? He didn't go anywhere special, but he still is one of the greatest interior defensive linemen in the history of football. I just think getting a guy that has that many sacks under his belt, that can get to the quarterback that consistently, regardless of what level of football they have played at, I mean, I like going get that guy. So if you have to trade up to go get him, as long as you're not giving away everything and that, then I'm fine with it because any kind of guy that knows how to get to the quarterback, that often, that consistently. He's got a spot on my team.
Sapp played for Miami.
He played for Miami, so I was incorrect.
He played for the U. He was ended up being the Big East Defensive Player of the Year, but he wasn't all that highly touted coming out of high school. So
forget I used Warren Sapp as an example and pick another good defensive lineman. I'm just saying that you see guys like all the time that come out of, who was it for the Saints their Super Bowl year? Akeem Hicks.
Oh, yeah.
He was out of Canada. He went to like Regina, Saskatchewan college. No, I'm not even, I'm being 100%.
I know.
And I mean, he came down and did he stick and stay in the NFL? Is he a Hall of Famer? No. But did he not have at least one damn good year for the Saints and pushed into the playoffs? Yes. So I'd be down for that.
Yeah, I think as long as you don't give up the farm and, like you said, you're constantly needing pass rushing help, and it can't hurt you, especially because you're going to get them on a cheap contract with a second-round deal if you take them in the second round. You have Cam Jordan. You have Marcus Davenport. You sign Mario Edwards, but then you get a fourth guy. Then you can have a rotation. And in today's NFL, you need your defenses. You have to rotate those pass rushers in and out. The days of a guy staying in for all three plays is over. It's all specialty now. It's okay, well, this guy's got a special skill set. We're going to have him come in and just be our pass rusher on third down.
Yeah, Cam Jordan is the rarity in the NFL now.
Correct. And you have certain guys now, it's become so specialized, certain guys are just pass rushers, other guys can defend the run. It's very rare that you have defensive linemen that can do both.
And what's crazy is the Saints have Cam Jordan and Sheldon Rankins. They can both do that.
Correct.
They can both stop the run and get to the passer.
But now think about this. If you can get a guy like Ferguson, right? You got Cam Jordan. You got Malcolm Brown, Sheldon Rankins, Marcus Davenport, Mario Edwards. And then you add a Ferguson. Ooh, that is a filthy,
Rams eat your heart out.
That's an absolute filth in that defensive line. And you can shut down the run and the pass left and right. As to your point about the level of competition, and I think that's a fair point because we talked about this. Hell, this was a topic of a conversation about Marcus Davenport last year, right?
Exactly.
Because of the level of competition that he played. I saw Ferguson play. I also saw him sack and go up against LSU offensive linemen and make them look silly just this past year.
Yep.
Okay, inside Tiger Stadium.
Yep.
Okay, so when he plays the elite level, it's not an issue for him. Okay, the thing with Jabraylon was he was undersized coming out of high school. He had to be redshirted his first year, and he put on mass. He hit a growth spurt, and he put on muscle. And he worked his way into that. He wasn't – his brother, Jazz, was more physically gifted coming out of high school and more heralded. That's why Jazz ended up going to LSU to start his career as a sensational wide receiver. It didn't work out. He had to end up at Northwestern State. Now he's put himself in a position to be – a mid-round draft prospect just like his brother. His brother had to go the more traditional route. He had to be redshirted. He had to work his way into that role and developed and got better and better every year. Those guys sometimes fall through the cracks, Cody. It just happens. Sometimes those kids don't hit that last growth spurt, and maybe a team from the SEC or a Power 5 school looked at him and goes, you know, if other guys turn us down, we'll come back to him and maybe we can develop him. Another thing I like when you get those guys from those smaller schools, well, they tend to play with a chip on their shoulder too because they still have that thing of, well, I wasn't recruited all that highly coming out of high school. People doubted me. And once again, it may be fabricated. That whole narrative may be BS. But to them, it's not. Right. To them, they believe it as it's the gospel.
How do you think Tom Brady still plays as if he's got something to prove?
Oh, he's still angry
latches
about
on
being, right,
to that seventh round or sixth round draft pick. He latches on to that. I mean, he is the greatest of all time, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
But yet he still plays as if he's got something to prove. And he even went to Michigan. He went to a big school. He still found something to give him motivation, and that is just being drafted behind countless other quarterbacks that he is now, you know, more than trumped.
Correct. A lot of those guys usually play with a chip on their shoulder. Dan Marino was another one. Okay, Dan Marino fell in the draft that year, the famous 83 draft, where him and Jim Kelly and John Elway all got drafted, their teams avoided him like the plague. He fell all the way down the draft board. Aaron Rodgers, just to use a more recent example, how many times have we heard Aaron Rodgers talk about that draft night and how much that fueled him, right? Because he fell down. Alex Smith went number one overall to San Francisco, and he fell all the way down the draft board. Those guys tend to play with a chip on their shoulder, and those guys tend to work harder. It doesn't always work out. Sometimes those small school guys are busts, and sometimes those small school guys can't play at the next level. Absolutely. But when you think about guys that are busts, you think about the guys that are draft busts and everything like that, you think about guys from bigger programs that come in with more hype.
Oh, we do have somebody I believe wants to get in on this conversation on the Ardco Equipment Hotline. We'll see what he thinks. Raymond, meet the Antagonator.
Oh, the Antagonator. Welcome to the rap game, man. How's it going?
What's going on, guys?
It was going well, man. What you got on your mind this morning?
Well, hey, Cody, I was listening to you talk about the small players coming out of little college in the NFL, and you used Warren Sapp as an example.
Yeah. We established that was a terrible example.
Yeah, he went to Miami. That ain't a small school.
Right. No. We established that was a bad. That was a bad example. I was trying to make a point, and I failed miserably.
that kid will be just fine out of Louisiana Tech.
I think so, too.
I agree. I think he'll be fine whether he goes to the Saints or somewhere else. He's going to fall to the second round, and someone's going to get themselves a steal. They're going to have a favorable contract, and that's a guy that you're going to see make an impact right off the bat for whatever team it is. Let me ask you this. Do you think he would be a good fit for the Saints?
Oh, yeah. Just like you said, we need pass rushers, and you can't never have enough.
That's right, especially in today's NFL. Appreciate the call, brother. Especially in today's NFL. You know, back in the day, you could get away with having just one guy. I mean, there's a lot of teams that were built that way where you had just the one guy as the pass rusher. But now you need multiple because just the way the game is played, it's so much quicker. The snap counts are quicker. Quarterbacks are getting the ball out of their hands quickly. You don't have time for that old-fashioned pass rusher to get around to the quarterback. It's just not how it's built these days. So if the Saints can get themselves another pass rusher at a steal there in the second round, they should do it all day long. We'll throw it up on the Twitter as well. We'll let you vote, let you decide. Do you think if Jabraylon Ferguson is right there, the NCAA's all-time sack leader from Louisiana Tech, should the Saints draft him in the second round? We'll throw that up, and we'll talk about the results on tomorrow's show. We got one final break right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Last segment, we talked about small school guys that play with a chip on their shoulder. Cody Schutz brought up Warren Sapp. He is
womp, womp, womp.
But someone we did not mention.
This name already crossed my mind. I'm not going to steal your thunder, but this name already crossed my mind because he doesn't even pump his college. Doesn't he pump his high school, or is that T.O. that does that when he has the Monday Night Football and I'm such and such from, you know, the
I hate the high school.
Yeah, thing. But I think he pumps his high school even. I was trying to find a defensive lineman in my defense because I knew this name. This name crossed my mind. I was looking for a defensive lineman.
Yes.
But go ahead.
Yes. Jerry Rice. Is Jerry Rice the greatest small school prospect of all time in football history?
I mean,
the best player to come from a small college. That's a lot of guys now. You're talking all those old school SWAC guys that played at Grambling too.
Right.
You know, any other kind of small school guys. Jerry Rice played at Mississippi Valley State, dude. Mississippi Valley State.
I mean, that's not bad.
A lot of those teams, when you go... Somehow Jerry Rice found a way to make it from there. into the Hall of Fame as considered the greatest wide receiver of all time, and to many, the greatest player of all time. So, yes, Jerry Rice. But, yes, should the Saints take Jabraylon Ferguson, the NCAA sack leader? We're going to throw that up on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. You can vote. We'll talk about the results on tomorrow's show. I don't think the Saints are going to stand pat. I really don't. I think they have that second-round pick. I think you're going to see them. Don't be surprised if they take the 2020 first-rounder that they have, trade it to someone to get into the low first round and pick up another second. Or use that first rounder to get 2 seconds and a third or something like that. They're going to add multiple picks. They're not going to just sit pat and add one guy in the draft. It's not what they do. And especially with the way that they feel that they have to be all in right now. All in. Like, they feel like this is going to be their last year. So they're going to have to do it. But if you were using, like, another pass rusher, Khalil Mack. He went to Buffalo. Okay, that's a non-Power 5 school. That's the guy, the most dominant defensive player in the National Football League. Once again, plays with a huge chip on his shoulder. Huge chip on his shoulder. So I think Jabraylon Ferguson, he's going to get drafted. You know, you'd like him to maybe stay inside the state, play for the Saints. But regardless, I think the Saints are going to be aggressive and they're going to be making moves in the draft. I don't think you're going to see them stand pat. I really don't. They want more picks early on, and they're going to do something about that. And they don't really have any players that they can dump, Cody, to get picks back. So it's going to be trading the 2020 pick, and they'll go all in on that. I want to thank our guest today, our good friend Tim Grubbs, the voice of the New Orleans Baby Cakes, for making some time for us. We'll try to get Andrew Juge back on the show. We'll effort him for possibly later in the week. Just a reminder, make sure to tune in tomorrow for the Rap Game with RP3. We got a hell of a show lined up for you. We got Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers. He'll be joining us at 7:32. We'll also have Jerry Glasgow, Raging Cajuns softball coach. He'll be joining us tomorrow. And then Les East, our good friend from CrescentCitySports.com, talking Pels and Saints.
Are you struggling to read your own handwriting there? Is that what was happening?
I struggle to even get dressed by myself. So the fact that I somehow have been allowed to have a sports talk radio show is an accomplishment in itself.
I just saw him. He's going through the list. Yeah, tomorrow we got this guy. And then pause. Jerry Glasgow. Happy WrestleMania week, Raymond.
Happy WrestleMania week, indeed. Dan Patrick Show is coming up next. After that, the Jim Rome Show. Then, Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4. Our good brother, the one and only Ben Love. Bumper to Bumper Sports. It's going to be a full 3 hours today. Or no, it's going to be just 2 hours today.
I'm excited.
That's right. It's going to be an exciting 2 hours for Ben Love. 4 to 6, he's going to lead you into the LSU baseball pregame show at 6 o'clock. And then first pitch at 6:30. The Tigers at home at Alex Box Stadium taking on the other Tigers of Grambling State University.
The Stros on the rewind.
That's right. Astros at Rangers on the rewind. Y'all be great today. Have a safe day. Stay out of trouble. I know it's WrestleMania week, but try to behave. Our good friend, the Cajun Kiwi himself, Craig Perks, is up next with Perks of the Game right here on 103.7 The Game.